Turn in your guns, disband the NRA, vote out all Republicans, or you have the blood of children on your hands. That is the narrative that is being sold to us by some of the survivors of the horrific shooting which took place last week in Florida. And they're deeply serious. They're deeply serious with their political agenda, their campaign in this midterm election year to take what is clearly a tragedy and turn it into a political bludgeon with which to go after an agenda that was pre-existent to anybody being shot in Florida last week. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and your iHeartRadio app. Two ways to stream the program. We are here 9 to 11 weeknights. Appreciate you tuning in. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us this evening. You're going to have an opportunity to interact with a couple of fantastic guests, the first of which is on the line with us and will join us shortly, Dr. John Lott. We'll get to his intro if you're not already familiar here momentarily. But I just want to bring you up to date with what's going on with these kids from the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida. From Politico, during a spate of TV appearances Sunday morning, students Jacqueline Corn, Emma Gonzalez, David Hogg, Cameron Kasky, and Alex Wind unveiled plans to mobilize students to urge lawmakers to act in response to Wednesday's fatal shooting in Parkland, Florida, that claimed the lives of 17 of their fellow classmates and school staffers. Now, they started off with statements that are fairly benign and certainly understandable, given what they just experienced. They told NBC's Meet the Press, "We're marching," and they're referencing the fact that they're going to have a national demonstration on March 24th. "We're marching because it's not just schools, it's movie theaters, it's concerts, it's nightclubs. This kind of stuff can't just happen. You know, we are marching for our lives. We are marching for the 17 lives we lost, and we're marching for our children's lives and our children's children and their children." Okay, fair enough. I got you. I feel you. But then they get to their actual agenda, what it is that they're trying to pursue. And as it turns out, it's not a specific policy proposal in terms of, you know, how to... We keep hearing about these common sense gun legislation that we just need to get on board with and pass, but nobody seems to actually define what that means. It's common sense, so apparently you're just supposed to know. They continued, "These people who are being funded by the NRA are not going to be allowed to remain in office when midterm elections roll around. They're going to be voted out of office. Incumbency rates are going to drop." So there you go. That's the agenda. That's the prescription for dealing with what took place in Florida last week. Oppose anybody who is supported by the NRA. Target the NRA. Target gun rights. Well, we have a guest on the line who might have something to say about that. Dr. John Lott, the author of, among other books, More Guns, Less Crime, who's done much work on the subject, an American economist. You're used to hearing him on the Jason Lewis program back when he was on this air. Appreciate you joining us tonight, sir.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. You're going to have an appearance here locally in the Twin Cities coming up on the 23rd, which is this Friday. That is going to be at the Lakeville Area Arts Center, and people can find out more about it at mnsd56.org. That's mnsd56.org. Now, this is an event that was scheduled prior to the events which took place last week and has taken on a different flavor, I imagine. What are you anticipating is going to be the focus of your remarks at this point, and has that changed from before last week?
Well, originally I was going to be talking about how gun control laws primarily harm the most vulnerable people in our society, how it makes it more costly, more difficult, particularly for relatively poor people, minorities, people who are most likely to be victims of violent crime to be able to go and defend themselves. You know, you take something like that's being pushed, kind of the number one thing for Bloomberg and other groups after this mass public shooting, these background checks on private transfers of guns. You know, in Washington, D.C., where I'm at right now, it costs $125 to privately transfer a gun. That's just the cost only of the background check that you have to have done. Now, it's true there are other states like Oregon where it's just as inexpensive as $55. But if you're talking about, you know, $55 or $100 or $125 in New York City, it's even higher, you know, that can make the difference between whether or not a law-abiding citizen is able to go and get a gun to protect themselves and their families. There's also huge mistakes that occur in the system that overwhelmingly affect Hispanics and blacks because of the way the system's set up. You know, it's when they say that there are 3 million dangerous, prohibited people that have been stopped from buying guns. 99.9% of those are mistakes, that they simply got the wrong person. Somebody who had a name similar to a felon from getting a gun is not the same thing as stopping the actual felon from getting a gun. And I was going to go through a lot of that stuff. Now, after this tragedy that we had happen, I want to talk about kind of what's been proposed and what would actually work. And I think the thing that frustrates me tremendously is that the types of proposals that were being put forward within an hour or two of the attack, even before we even knew anything about it, as we do time after time, such as these background checks on private transfers, you know, wouldn't have stopped this attack. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't have, that regulation wouldn't have stopped one of the mass public shootings this century. You know, and, you know, you go through the different proposals that they have, everything from that to terror watch lists to now they're starting to get back to the assault weapons ban. You know, we've tried that. Different states have had that. We've had a lot of academic work on that, academic work even funded by the Clinton administration when they were trying to test their proposals that are there. And, you know, it just hasn't worked. I mean, I wish those types of things were easy. The problem is that they, you know, they push the things that don't work, and they claim that they're virtuous. And as you mentioned at the intro, they say if you don't support them, you have blood on your hands, even though it's not clear why you would have blood on your hands if their proposals wouldn't affect these things.
Right.
And they must know it.
Right.
But what they ignore are the types of policies that would make a difference. This attack, as all the mass public shootings in Florida, and 98% of the mass public shootings in the United States since 1950, have one thing in common, and that is they keep on occurring in places that are gun-free zones.
Mm.
You know, you can't read the diaries or other statements that these killers leave and not come away impressed by how these people plan their attacks.
Right.
They may be insane in some sense, but they're not stupid. They want to kill as many people as possible, and they explicitly talk about it time after time, going after targets where they know nobody has a gun, because they know the longer it takes for somebody to arrive on the scene with a gun, the more people they're going to be able to go and kill.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that the left rolls out their wheelbarrow full of bad ideas like clockwork the moment something like this happens, and they do time and time again every single time that it happens. And yet I get the sense, and I've yet to really put my finger on how to define this, but I get the sense that something's different this time. There seems to be something different about the tone and the sense of urgency and the strength of this opposition that's rallied around these students coming out of this Florida high school so quickly in order to kind of propose this literal ultimatum. I mean, they went on the Sunday shows and they said, they literally said, you're with us or you're against us. As somebody who has clearly followed this for quite some time, decades in fact, do you get the sense that there's anything particularly different about what's taking place currently in response to this shooting last week as opposed to the ones we've seen in the past?
Right. Well, I'll tell you one thing's for darn sure, and that is since last fall, the media coverage of this stuff has changed. You know, in the past, I would at least appear a couple times on CNN or MSNBC or
right.
You know, CNBC or something like that. Maybe once in a while on the network shows. But I've pretty much been completely frozen out. And you see that across the board. I mean, other
right.
people who I know have similar views.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get a call from a producer, and a producer at CNN, you know, I'm thinking they're going to invite me on the show, and they ask you questions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out that the only reason why they were asking you questions was just to find out what your arguments would be so that they could pose some, you know,
watered down yeah.
of what you were going to say to their four panelists who
sure.
all agree with each other.
Right.
And you know, have nobody on the panel to go and provide an alternative viewpoint. And I kind of think that has an impact on the discussion, the fact that people only hear one side on this thing.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you. It just drives me nuts listening to the shows, and they'll have people that don't know much about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They repeat Bloomberg talking points. So you
right.
had like this 18 school shootings so far this year. And, you know, so, you know, few people realize that includes things like a police officer's gun accidentally discharging.
Right.
It includes a bus that was in a school bus parking lot, not even a school area, but, you know, a downtown place where they park buses overnight, who had a window broken by a pellet gun firing.
Right.
It includes things like gunshots off of campus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know where you want to draw the line, how many blocks the gunshot has to be included as a school shooting, but, you know, I assume most people, when they hear that there's a school shooting, they assume the gun was fired on
right,
campus.
Right, right. Yeah, it's reflective. It's reflective of the general disingenuous nature of the discourse, and I think you hit upon.
Well, Bloomberg's had a huge impact on this. I mean,
yeah.
he puts out stuff all the time that the media just repeats. And
sure.
this was on this particular claim you saw on everything from Fox to everything else. You know, they have all these people across the board. You have, I think that's been a huge change, and I think it's affected since people don't hear any of the arguments on the other side.
Right.
I mean, to me, I want to do something.
Right.
I think something
right.
needs to be
right.
done. I'm
right.
frustrated.
Yeah.
Yes. Because the response. Oh, the other thing is if you listen to CNN or MSNBC or, you know, NBC, they say, well, you know, people don't want to. The other side's laying low. They
yeah,
don't
right.
you know, and if they kind of want to paint people as unwilling or unable or
right.
embarrassed to defend
right. Right.
an alternative viewpoint,
yeah.
well, have somebody on. I'd be happy to go on the shows.
All right.
And there are other people that I know that would be happy to go on the shows, but they're not being asked to do it. And then, you know, it's one thing to say, and I actually had one person in the media tell me, well, we just don't think it's appropriate for your viewpoint to be shown here, you know, that it's just so completely wrong. And my response to them is, well, at least tell everybody that's the reason why you're not having anybody on
right.
the other side.
Right. Right.
I've only seen a couple people who are just like, it seems like they went out of their way to get the worst defenders of the other side that are there.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And if they actually thought that your opinion was that horrific, then they would be eager to have you on so that they could debunk it live on the air and make you feel all embarrassed. But that's obviously, once again, disingenuous. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us and ask a question or present a comment with Dr. John Lott, our guest on the phone, author of More Guns, Less Crime. We'll continue with him when we return. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Mississippi Queen. We've been talking about the Florida shooting and the aftermath, which instantaneously became deeply political and geared towards going against the NRA, going against Republicans specifically, presenting ultimatums that you're either with a select group of survivors from that shooting at a Florida high school, or you're against them, the portrayal of, you know, having blood on your hands if you don't think you ought to turn in your own gun as penance for a crime that you didn't commit. It's been real pretty these last few days responding to all of this and taking it all in. And we've been on the line with John Lott, an American economist and author of, among other books, More Guns, Less Crime. And you can follow him. He has a blog at John R. Lott with two T's, .blogspot.com. He's also going to be making an appearance here in the Twin Cities this Friday at the Lakeville Area Arts Center. You can find out more information on that at MNSD56.org. That's MNSD56.org. And just click on the banner for John Lott. Dr. Lott, we have a call on the line, a caller who wants to make a comment or ask a question. Let's get him on with you. Chris from Minneapolis, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I think I got a solution to solve all and end all. We need to go back to the old West, like Matt Dillon, Gunsmoke, hangings and all.
All right, I appreciate your thought, Chris. That's not really what you're advocating, is it, Dr. Lott?
No, well, I mean, well, first of all, about 75% of or more of these people who do these attacks die at the scene, so I'm not sure what hangings would do in most of these cases. And even the ones where they don't die at the scene, they expected to die at the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's, they just couldn't bring themselves to commit suicide at the last moment. But I don't think that would be particularly helpful. Look, the point is that what's crucial is the amount of time that elapses between when one of these attacks start and somebody's able to arrive on the scene with a gun. You know, a lot of people I hear, including the NRA, want to have armed guards at these places.
Right.
I'm not really sure that that's the wisest move. And I know it's not. And the reason is that you put somebody in uniform to guard one of these places, it's like putting somebody there with a sign that says "Shoot me first."
Yep. Okay? Absolutely.
And you know, it's an incredibly boring job. I mean, can you imagine being a police officer at an elementary or secondary school? You know, middle school or whatever.
Right.
The thing is. You know, there's no way they can be on guard every minute, every day for months on end that's there. And, you know, if the attackers know who is the person who's guarding the place,
right,
and they have any idea what their habits are and what they like to do and where they tend to be, it creates a real problem. The thing is, these killers, they plan these attacks 6 months at least, sometimes a year, 2 years, 2.5 years in advance. The Sandy Hook killer was planning his attack 2.5 years in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really difficult to stop them with that. The advantage of concealed carry is that you take away the strategic advantages that these killers have. They don't know who they have to guard against.
Right.
They don't know who may be able to go and stop them.
Right.
And so it's a reason why I think you see these people time after time going after those targets where they know people there can't have guns. You listen to some recorded conversations they've had with these attacks that they have stopped. They're chilling, where these people just say, well, I checked out this church. They don't allow people to carry there. They'll make it easy for me to kill lots of people before the police are able to arrive.
Right.
Now, the other part of this discussion that we've had is they're going after the FBI for obviously dropping the ball, or they talk about mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put all your eggs in the basket of identifying these individuals before they commit these attacks.
Sure, sure.
Okay?
Right.
And I just give you a simple example. 60% of the people who have committed these mass public shootings over the last decade have been seeing mental health care professionals prior to the attack, either a psychiatrist or a psychologist. And in not one single case were these psychiatrists or psychologists able to identify any of these individuals mm-hmm. as a danger to themselves or a danger to others.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these psychiatrists have been world experts. The Santa Barbara killer, he was seeing three psychiatrists, and one of them was the head of psychiatry at Children's Hospital in Los Angeles.
Right.
The guy is considered a world expert on violence by children, even though he wasn't actually seeing this young man for that. The young man's parents were extremely wealthy, and they were able to essentially afford to get him the very best psychiatric care. And you see that type of stuff happening over and over again with these things. And at some point, you have to ask, okay, you can try to do that, but what's your backup plan?
Right.
What happens if you're not able to go and identify these individuals, as we see time after time they can't? Now, this person's behavior beforehand in terms of posts and, you know, comments like he wants to be a professional school shooter and other things, are obviously extreme in terms of the types of statements he made beforehand. But, you know, even then, obviously, it slipped through the cracks. But you can't depend on the FBI identifying these people in more than a fraction of the cases.
Well, and it seems unusual to me to have that degree of the number of indicators around this particular guy seems unusual to me, and not something that you could expect to typically encounter leading up to an event of this nature.
Yeah, well, look, here's what I would normally say, and that is, after each of these attacks, you have all sorts of people come out and you said, well, you should have seen this. You should have seen
right,
that.
Right,
it should
right.
have been clear. The thing is, it's all this Monday morning quarterbacking.
Yeah.
Things that would have had no significance for an individual seeing it somehow take on huge importance because it should have been clear from what they were seeing.
And right.
That's just unfair to the individuals right. who saw what they thought at the time were minor things.
Yeah.
I'm sure those individuals are having a hard time sleeping because
yeah.
they're wondering, should I have interpreted this differently?
Yeah, it's like all the people who can pick the right stocks after the price moves. All right, appreciate having you on with us tonight, Dr. John Lott. Appreciate your time very much. Thanks for joining the program.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Once again, Dr. John Lott will be appearing this Friday at the Lakeville Area Arts Center. You can find out information about that at mnst56.org. We'll continue to take your calls on this and move on to some other topics of the day, including my breakdown, my analysis of the potential gubernatorial candidacy of Tim Pawlenty. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.